My name is Jill Coyle, and from years of experience as a divorce attorney, I know for a fact that no one dies from divorce. The experts and I are here to show you how to not only survive, but thrive during the most difficult times. Welcome to another episode of No One Dies from Divorce. Today, we are talking about the mental malfunctions of divorce. And I have somebody that I'm really excited to introduce to you because this is something we've never had on the show before. So Amy Perry, welcome to the show. I'm really excited you're here.
Hello. Thanks for the invite. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, let me introduce you a little bit so people know. Okay. So Amy is a board certified psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner, and she also has a doctorate in nurse practice, so a DNP. She is passionate about providing quality, compassionate, and comprehensive mental health services to adolescents and adults. She maintains a comprehensive focus of care, including brief psychotherapy and prescribing mental health medications if indicated for adolescents and adults. She possesses strong clinical skills enhanced by natural ability to build rapport with patients and families. So Amy, I'm really excited to have you here because we bring on quite a few, I would say, divorce coaches and mental health coaches. We also bring on therapists. But you're the next level. And honestly, we need to be talking about this because when we're dealing with divorce, we know that it's very, very traumatic, that you are going through a very, very traumatic issue, that there's real bouts of possible grief, depression. But sometimes we just talk about, you know, going and talking to somebody about it and ending it there. And we all know that mental health doesn't stop there. So I'm really excited to have you because we're going to go to that next level of this is what we need to do when we are stuck and we can't get out by just talking about it. And, right. And that's what we're going to talk about because, so I kind of wanted to just get more of your background. Like, how did you get to here? You know, what's your story that led you to what you're doing today?
Okay. So I'll probably kind of censor my story a little bit. Some of the people in my story, I didn't get, I didn't talk to them about this podcast. And so, okay. So I've been through two divorces. My first one, I was married 12 years, two daughters. My second one, married 2 years, never really should have happened. Pretty traumatic for me. And I think that was kind of the breaking point in my life, in the sense that I feel like I needed, like, I went through a pretty traumatic event on my second divorce. But after that, I thought, you know, there's other people that are going through this, other kids that are going through this. So how can I help them? How can I help somebody make it through this traumatic event that they're going through? And I had initially kind of focused on substance abuse because that was kind of, you know, the reason why for the divorce. And so, but then as I like made my way through school and clinicals and come to find out that, you know, teenagers, they kind of get thrown to the side a little bit. Like parents are going through a tough time. You know, the younger kids don't understand what's going on and are okay with it, pretty resilient. But the teenagers are just struggling and they just feel like they're not being listened to. And, you know, so I kind of was not necessarily thrown, but drawn to teenagers and wanting to help them. That, and I think, you know, in school, the teenage brain was probably my biggest weakness, and dealing with teenagers was my biggest weakness. At the time of my second divorce, I had two teenage girls and trouble, two daughters. And, you know, the longstanding mom-daughter fighting kind of took a toll on us. And so, you know, really understanding where they were coming from, what they were going through is a big deal. And just, you know, I work for a teenage residential treatment center as well. And seeing kiddos there, their parents in a divorce or parents not knowing how to handle teenagers. That's another one too. And so we can get into that one a little bit as well. You know, I'm seeing a lot of parents who struggle with dealing with their teenagers. They're like, how do I deal with my teenager? How do I make them behave? And you can't make them behave. The best thing you can do is help them help understand them and help them understand themselves. And, you know, there's a lot of conflict with parents and kiddos, teenagers in divorce. And so
yeah,
I could go on and on all day.
I love it. So my first question to you, so did you go back to school after your divorce?
I did. Yeah.
So that's amazing. So mm-hmm. all you people out there that are saying, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I say this all the time, Amy, is that you need to use your divorce as the platform or the launching pad to become the best version of yourself. And here is living proof that that's possible.
Yeah. Yeah. There are so many people out there who just are lost. They don't know what to do. And so I'm really happy to hear that mental health is really taking a big front page to things too. I know there's a lot of celebrities that are promoting mental health and it's really coming out. We're decreasing the stigmas, which makes me really happy. Mm-hmm. At some point, sometime we all have some kind of mental health issue, whether it's anxiety and beyond. I mean, we all have something. And so just kind of introspective and seeing a therapist or medication to help us understand what's going on.
Absolutely. So, that's the thing is that there's mental health and then there's mental health. Like you said, we're all struggling with it. I had a therapist tell me years ago that we all have anxiety. We just manifest it in different ways. Mm-hmm. And the best, you know, like not all anxiety needs anxiety medication. Like a lot of mm-hmm. ways you can do by just simple coping mechanisms to recognize, oh, this is how I deal with anxiety. So I'm going to do something that either levels it out or makes it so it works better. But I do love that mental health is coming to the forefront of us talking about it. So going back to our teenagers, I have a teenager, she's 13 and a half going on 50. I swear.
Oh, lucky.
Oh my gosh. And she, mm-hmm. you know, we all don't know what the heck we're going on, but this is one observation I have about teenagers. And I kind of wanted your introspection about it is they are put in almost no win situations all the time. Like I look at the pressure my daughter is under at school to perform, the pressure she is to, you know, be an athlete. And, you know, like I love volleyball. I want her to play volleyball, but you know, and she trying really hard to make that part of what she wants to do and thrive at. And, you know, they just have so much around them that's telling them that they're not good enough, that they're not going to succeed, that they can't do it. And this is all being done with the fakeness of social media. And then their frontal cortex, not even being developed. Like,
right.
So give us for, you know, whatever situation we're in, people like me that aren't divorcing, but have a teenager and people that are mm-hmm. like, what is the hope? Like, I want to start with the good news. Tell me some good news about what is happening in the world today that shows that the kids are going to be okay.
So like you said, the frontal cortex isn't quite developed yet. And it's actually the last part of our brain to develop. It starts from the back and move forward. And so, you know, with teenagers, you know, the frontal cortex is, you know, where they make their decisions, where they make good judgments, things like that. And so with that not really properly working, and they make these choices, and all too often as parents were like, what were you thinking when you did that? And they're like, well, I don't know. They really weren't.
I wasn't thinking.
Truly, they weren't. Right. And so, you know, at that age, us as parents, the best thing we can do is just be a good example. Be patient with our teenagers. Patience is the big thing. And, you know, instead of getting mad, well, why did you do that? Understanding like where they were coming from, like what made you want to do that? What made you come to that decision that that was a good idea? And then help them understand why that wasn't such a good idea. And, you know, teaching them these things, teaching them, you know, it's, they're going to learn their own consequences. Like they post something on social media and their friends are going to come after them and they're going to be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that. So they already have struggles. But then when they go home and, you know, they don't put a dish in the dishwasher the right way and parents get upset, you know, that's teach them how to make these adult decisions and make the right decision so that, you know, they learn from things and can move on in the future. And And the good news is as their brain develops and hormones kind of settle in a little bit and they grow up and mature and learn things, things get better. Mm-hmm. But it is pretty rough from like age 13 to about age 24. Things are rough for everybody, unfortunately.
I think one of the benefits we're going to find with at least these generation of teens is that they are more aware of the surroundings of this world of than ever before. And I think that's going to bring a level of empathy and people going into more like social awareness programs, like wanting to be, you know, more involved in the environment and things that have never been like the sexy, you know, preview. I think that we're going to see these teens that care more about deeper issues than we've ever seen. And that's just because the world is at their fingertips with their phones. But I also, I see like a resilience coming out of teenagers that is never, you know, we've never had. Like if I had to deal with what the teenager has to deal with right now, I would have crumbled. I mean, it was hard enough being a teenager in the 90s and, you know, having to deal with the Christina Aguilera and the, you know, Jennifer Aniston look and not ever going to be that. That was the level of my, you know, my issues, but I do see that they're, you know, for the most part, they're coming up to a level of resilience because they are going to have to be stronger. I mean, there's just no other word. Like you have to be stronger in this world to survive, and they are going to do it because most of them are going to survive. They're going to be okay. So I think,
and another good thing too is schools are starting to recognize that mental health is a big deal, and having classes and teaching interpersonal skills and things that I don't know that we ever got when we were in high school, honestly. And so, you know, to have that coming out, or, you know, schools having more therapists, more peer support groups, things like that. And also social media is, popping up with more peer support groups and places they can go. And, you know, like Utah Pride Center, just going to throw that one out there, very supportive of LGBTQ and ever-changing emotions of these kiddos. And so, yeah, it's up and coming and awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah. One of the things about like, so let's talk about what additional challenges are these teenagers, you know, facing in a divorce? So we talk a lot of about this quite a bit, and I get mixed reactions depending on who the professional is that I'm talking to about what does a teenager need through divorce. You know, some say counseling, every single one of them in counseling. I get a lot that say no, like you have to be able to react. My divorce attorney hand is always going to say, like, your kid needs two adult parents. So before you decide to throw your kid into getting help, you just go get help. Cause I promise you, if we had two adult parents that knew how to just put aside their childish behaviors and act like adults, then your teenagers, your kids, they're going to be just absolute fine. So what's your opinion and thoughts on that?
Yeah, agreed. I do agree with therapy for sure. I mean, we can all use it without a doubt. I think the big thing is I see a lot of parentification, right? These kids are like expected to have the emotional capacity of an adult and the understanding of an adult, and they don't. They don't. And, you know, throwing us moms under the bus, specifically me, you know, you get to a situation where you're in the divorce and you're single and you're home and you're just stressed out. And so you take it out on your kiddo who you treat like an adult, or talk to them in a way that you would talk to some, like your therapist or a friend. And they're just like, I don't know what you just said, mom. And then moms get mad and then can't understand why their kids, why they just, you know, butt heads with their kids, and then see a lot of anxiety, and then moms are anxious. And then, you know, then they're like, my kid's so anxious. And I'm like, yeah, I can see why your kid's so anxious. And so, again, throwing us moms under the bus, But yeah, mom's definitely therapy, dad's therapy for sure. And I was actually listening to your previous podcast and, you know, you guys talking about kids shouldn't be the sounding board. Definitely they shouldn't be.
And not just your minor kids. We get see so mm-hmm. many times, like you have an adult kid, you know, like you have four kids and two yeah. more adults. And so you mm-hmm. think that you're okay using your two older children as the sounding board because they're adults and the courts can't come after you for it. You are yeah. ruining those children's lives by having to be your therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So just stop.
Yeah. So back to the parentification, you know, treat your kid with respect and, you know, treat them like an adult because they deserve it, but don't treat them like an adult as your significant other and don't depend on them too much emotionally. And, you know, let the kids be kids, let them go out and hang out with their friends. They're in that point in life where they need their friends. And, you know, I hear a lot of moms, well, I would know if my kids were doing drugs or I would know if my kids are doing that because I talk to my kids a lot. And I'm like, well, you know, as close as you may be to your kids, they're not going to tell you everything. I promise you. And so let them have their friends and let them enjoy their teenage years because that's what they need.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So a couple of questions I have, like, I have kids that suffer with anxiety mm-hmm. and I don't have anxiety. I don't manifest it in, you know, where I get anxious.
Yeah.
So that's been an interesting, you know, me learning how to deal mm-hmm. with my different kids and their personalities and their different anxieties. What advice do you give to parents to be able to kind of be able to maneuver that and, you know, learn more about how to kind of deal with each one of their children?
I think the biggest thing is the understanding. Understand where your anxiety, where your kid's anxiety is coming from. And where you were saying that your one kid's in a lot of sports and competitive maybe, mm-hmm. and, you know, wants to get really good grades and wants to do all this. Understanding you know, why it's so important for them and why they feel like they're so competitive. Just kind of really digging in and asking them, because like you said, kids nowadays are really pretty introspective and understand things. And so they already know what's going on in their brain. You just may not know as a parent. And so, that's the biggest advice that I give parents is just really understanding, zero judgment, and just listening to their kids.
Yeah. So to the next level, mm-hmm. when is it that your kids are just kind of struggling to your child needs help? Like as a parent, where do you, how do you know that you, okay, time is now.
So, the biggest one that I will ask about is, how's it affecting your daily life? Like, does your kiddo have so much anxiety that they just cannot go to school today? Mm-hmm. I can't go to school today, mom. I have so much anxiety. You know, the schools are really accepting a 504 plans mm-hmm. for, you know, extending a time on getting assignments done. And so, you know, if their mental health is really affecting their day-to-day life, where they can't leave the house or they don't want to be around their friends, or, you know, really depressed, suicidal because one of their friends doesn't like them, that's almost past the time of coming in. And so, but yeah, getting to that point, definitely come in and bring your kiddos in and therapy. You know, I do more of the medication management piece and, you know, talking with kids and seeing how their day-to-day is, how they're feeling, how they're sleeping. That's a big thing too. If they aren't sleeping, we're going to work on the sleeping piece first and foremost, and then see how their anxiety is after that. And so
that's the next question I wanted to ask you. So like, mm-hmm. what's the difference of depressed and, you know, feeling depressed and clinically depressed?
Right. So that's where I just have a series of questions. I ask, you know, what is your brain doing when you go to bed at night? How many times do you wake up in the morning, or how many times do you wake up at night? How are you during the day? How is your mood? Like, are you elevated mood in the morning, but then super depressed at night? Just kind of ask how their moods are and how their days are and things like that. And then I can kind of come to the conclusion of whether if they're clinically depressed and the best medication to start them on, or if it's just situational, you know, well, I just broke up with my boyfriend last week and now I'm super sad, but then next week they're going to be just fine. And so asking all kinds of questions and kind of building a trust too. Like I tell them, you know, there's all this stuff I can't tell your parents. There's only a few things that I have to tell your parents, but I will let you know before I talk to them what I'm going to say, or we can talk to them together. And so, you know, building that trust, letting them know that what we talk about, I don't talk with their parents about.
I love that. What, why is there such a stigma around like giving your kid medication, you know, for whatever?
I don't know if I can fully answer to that as far as like parents. I can speak to like diagnoses. I think a lot of parents are like, well, I don't want my kid to have an autism diagnosis, or I don't want my kid to have a bipolar diagnosis. And so then they think, well, if my kid's on medication, then somebody's going to find out, and then I've raised my kid wrong. And so, which is not the case. I mean, you could have like the most perfect parent have this kid who just, for whatever reason, brain connections are, is just depressed. And so, you know, I think that's probably the stigma is especially with parents thinking I raised my kids wrong.
Right. And so, yeah. And it could be the difference of your child failing and succeeding. I mean, that's how important it is. And luckily we have a lot of research and development does go to mental health, and there are new drugs that are being done, you know, coming out all the time to help with this. And, you know, for so many years, the stigma in America especially was just don't talk about it, you know, which so people just suffered in silence. And, you know, and I'm an advocate for mental health. Obviously, I know you are in helping people recognize that you're not alone. You don't have to do it alone, and nobody expects you to do it alone. Right. This isn't the time to be strong or, you know, to say, oh, I'm bigger than this. Like sometimes our brains want to not work. And that's not your fault. And there's nothing you can do to change it. And when your brain doesn't want to work, it causes a lot of undue anguish and fear and anxiety and, you know, lowness for you that you just don't need to fill. So I always tell people, like, if you're at that point where you're like, I don't know how to get out of this sadness, there's a way. There's a way. And people like Amy can help you get there. And especially with teens, like, especially in Utah, like we hear so many suicide stories. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, if I can save one more kid, please, I will do that. Tomorrow is another day. Like you're important. Tomorrow wants you. And, you know, and there's a way. I promise you. And then the other thing is, oh my gosh, I tell my teenager this all the time. Life gets so much better.
Like, yeah, it does.
Middle school was the worst. High school got a little bit better because people grow up just a little bit. College was great, but still had challenges. And adulthood, I mean, I miss my summer breaks. I miss my Christmas breaks. But at the end of the day, I don't have some of those challenges that I had when I was a teenager. And I'm grateful for that. So life gets better.
Yes, it does.
I promise you. And then even as adults, in your story specifically, Amy, like you had some hardships. So So let's kind of like pivot, if you don't mind, sharing more on a personal level, like what was some advice that you could give our listeners of, hey, I survived divorce, not just once, but twice. And I'm a better person for it. So what are some tips that you could give our listeners about your journey and your personal?
Gosh, I didn't even think of that question. So I think just patience with yourself, just being comfortable in your own skin and being okay with how things are going, and taking what you think is a failure, you know, the divorce as being a failure, and learning from it, because something good always comes out of it, no matter what. And you know, it may take a little bit. It took me a couple of years to be like, you know what, this is actually what I was supposed to learn from this divorce, instead of, you know, I mean, it was a hard, like, 2 years of why, like, you know, kind of a pity party almost, but, then, you know, kind of pulling myself out and just like, okay, there was a reason for this. I may not know now, and I may not know in 10 years from now, but at some point I'm going to know why this had to happen, why I had to go through it. And so, I think that's the big thing, is just being patient with your emotions and knowing it's going to happen. And taking care of the mental health piece of your emotions, seeing that therapist. I mean, I see a therapist. I've seen the same therapist for, gosh, 15 years, I think. And, you know, she calls me on my crap, essentially, you know, like, why are you acting that way? And one of the biggest pieces that still to this day, is my therapist calling me on my first divorce and not sharing my kids, essentially. Like, I would get so angry about my kids having to go to their dad's house. And she's like, you have to share your kids. I mean, we had joint custody, but if the kids didn't want to go to their dad's house, I didn't force them. And so, you know, her calling me on things like that really helped. And still to this day, her calling me on those things and pushing me. And so that was a long-winded question. Answer.
I think it's really big of you to, first of all, your therapist is amazing for calling you out on that stuff. But then second, you're amazing because you listened. Those are two things that I don't think go hand in hand a lot, especially in divorce, because you want your therapist to tell you what you want him to say. And then second of all, a lot of times when you get advice that you don't like, you don't want to listen. So kudos to you. And I think that's really, really an important lesson. The other thing is that's the whole purpose of my book. And, you know, when I say no one dies from divorce, you know, I get a lot of critics that are like, well, people do die from divorce. And I'm like, no, people kill people. So domestic violence is real and that happens. And mental health kills people. But the divorce itself does not have to be the defining factor that kills you. It can be the actual thing that makes you stronger, makes you stand up taller than you ever were. And the divorce does not have to be the end. It can be the beginning. And just like you said, sometimes it's hard to see it at the time. Actually, I know it's hard, one step at a time, getting through that, you start to recognize that you're able to, you know, breathe again, and then you're able to make that step, and then you're able to leap, and then you're able to run. And, you know, you just in your story, I mean, have been able to stand up and do some amazing things because of it.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about like going through a divorce and, or, you know, like a lot of people think, oh, this is just an event. I'm just sad now. I don't need help. What do you tell them?
I ask them, okay, this rightfully so is situational for sure. But when it continues on week after week, and you're doing less of the things that you enjoyed, you're seeing less of your friends, you're just staying in your house, you're very irritable, come see me, see somebody, talk to somebody. Let's just talk about it, get it out. Let's find out what's going on. You may not feel that way until you start talking about it. And then hindsight, you're like, oh yeah, I actually was not feeling very good and I wasn't doing very good. And so it may be hard to see for a little bit, but, you know, and then back to your point of listening, maybe one of your friends might point out, hey, you seem to really be struggling with this. And then listening to them going, oh, well, maybe they see something that I'm not realizing. And so, yeah, being patient with yourself and actually understanding that it's okay to not be okay. I mean, we hear that all the time, right? Mm-hmm. It's okay to not be okay. And so really it's okay.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Reaching out. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the last thing I kind of wanted to talk about is there is hope to recovering and healing. Mm-hmm. And you know, I love the analogy of a scar. Like, you know, you were cut open and, you know, you had to be sewn up together. But what your body does is, you know, really miraculous in the fact that it grows together stronger than it was before. But it leaves a mark. And, you know, you're like, oh, that's frustrating. It leaves a mark. But the purpose of the mark is to remind you of whatever happened for purposes of, hey, don't do that again. Right. Mm-hmm. It also is a reminder to your body that you healed. And that's what I love about that is that, you know, your divorce can be that scar to remind you, you know, of, you know, things of the past or whatnot to not, you know, get into that situation or do again, but it allows you to grow stronger and heal stronger than you were before. And you become this person that is resilient and able to, you know, go to get your doctorate and, you know, do what you've done and help so many more people down this path or, you know, was what I would say is amazing that you have this empathetic approach, you know, with mental health, with substance abuse. I mean, you, when you've lived it, you can teach it. And I love that. So, but that is hope and it can be beautiful. So just kind of like last thoughts on you, like what would you be telling people about the hope in recovering and healing?
It's going to take time and it's going to hurt a little bit, but each day that you take one step forward is one step forward. It's not going to get fixed in one therapy session. It's not going to get fixed in 1 month of medication. It's not going to get fixed immediately. But to just embrace what you have to learn, what you've learned, what you're going to learn, what you're going to feel, and just keep moving forward and reach out. There's people out there going through the exact same thing. And there's people to help. Lots of people that love to help. And yeah.
I love that. Thank you, Amy. Where can people find you? If they need you, where are you?
Yes. So intercareconsulting.com, that is the private practice that I work with. And I do mostly medication management, a little bit of therapy, but I have lots of, resources. Also if therapists out there who have openings who, I can send info or, you know, patients their way for therapy every week, can definitely email me akperry, P-A-R-R-Y, 4@gmail.com. Send me their resources and I'll pass them out and hopefully I see lots of people and we get everybody feeling good.
Yes. I love it. Thank you so much, Amy. I love this. Remember, mental health is no joke. We're here to help you through this. And remember, just like you said, Amy, you don't have to do it alone. You got lots of people, you got a community of people that are willing to be here and reach out and help you through this. So thank you so much. And
thank you.
That is another episode of No One Dies from Divorce. Catch us next week. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed, please subscribe, follow, and share. I'd love to hear your questions and feedback. You can contact me at community@jillcoyle.com. See you next time. I am an attorney, but I am not your attorney. Any advice given on the podcast is general and shall not be construed as legal advice. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed, please subscribe, follow, and share. I'd love to hear your questions and feedback. You can contact me at community@jillcoyle.com. See you next time. I am an attorney, but I am not your attorney. Any advice given on the podcast is general and shall not be construed as legal advice.